There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile on this Friday. Glad y'all are along. Big Senior Bowl Saturday tomorrow. Looking at the radar and another line of rain coming through. It's like in the 40s and raining. You know, and Dr. Bill talked about it some this morning. This is supposed to be Saturday's weather. I mean, if you grew up here, Senior Bowl Saturday is supposed to be cold and rainy. It just, the fronts got mixed up. It's coming through today. Tomorrow looks fantastic. So great news for the game tomorrow and all the other activities going on this weekend. So good news there. We'll get more updates from staff meteorologist Dr. Bill Williams coming your way here in just about 25 minutes. And in studio, great to see Chief of Police for the City of Mobile, Paul Prine. Thanks for being here. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, great. Thank you for having me.
It's a... I want to talk about, obviously, now as chief, you've been chief for?
About three months.
But your career in law enforcement, I mean, when you were named chief, I have friends in law enforcement that said, great guy, he's been doing it for a long time. How long have you been doing this?
So 27 years next month. Yes, sir.
So you got in 27 years of doing law enforcement. The wisdom, I've talked about that with sheriffs and chiefs and public safety directors, about the value of the wisdom. Just knowing, having seen it before, I guess is a better term for it.
Yeah, you know, you'd be amazed of what you see over the years. And right. So I started my career in 1995 in Chickasaw, Alabama.
Right.
And then, of course, in 1997, I transferred over to the Mobile Police Department. And, of course, I guess you could say the rest is history.
Right.
But there was a lot between 1997 and where we are today.
Yeah, that wisdom portion. I was thinking about, I go back to a story, a particular officer, Mobile Police Department officer, I saw at an event, and some guy was screaming like arrest me and this and very calmly this officer's like, you're trespassing, sir. I just have to remove you. I'm not going to arrest you. And I'm looking at him, I'm standing with my buddy, I'm like, why wouldn't you? He said, because this is how you solve this thing. This is not a... And I realized then, because he had been in that situation so many times and seen it, he knew, like, this was nothing. It's just water off a duck's back.
Well, you'd be amazed what you get used to, I guarantee it.
Well, and that's one worry, too, for wisdom. And I know that recruiting is a big deal for law enforcement now, getting new people in and then holding on to them.
Right.
You know, letting them become somebody who's a 27-year veteran.
Well, I'll tell you this. You know, the mayor has done a lot of great things, in my opinion, for the city. And, of course, I'm biased.
Yeah.
But knowing where I came from, I will tell you this. His number one priority and his number one goal is to slow the attrition of the Mobile Police Department, because he sees the vision and understands just how paramount it is to ensure that we keep quality people on the job, protecting all of us.
How do you do that in today's environment where we turn on the news? And there's, you know, somebody in law enforcement a half a country away does something, and then people are hollering about police in their own community when it's really a story from somewhere else.
Well, you know, you bring up a great point. I think you and I were talking just a moment ago, is I think the biggest hurdles we have in law enforcement, not just locally or nationally, but certainly around the world, that every time you see a hiccup or a mess up by one individual somewhere else doing something what I call stupid, the rest of us have to eat it. And it seems like the biggest obstacles we have in law enforcement today is certainly perception, overcome negative press.
And that's, so you got to deal with that. At the same time, here you come in, your chief, and our city is in a real bad place when it comes to violence. I know that crime stats are down, but it sure seems like they're up, or violent crime is up. I mean, this is a real thing in our city.
Well, it is. But, you know, I'll tell you this. We're all battling this. We'll talk a little bit today, I'm sure, about the ARP funding and ShotSpotter. But at the end of the day, you know, crime trends. It trends up, it trends down, but it doesn't just do it locally. It does it nationally as well. And so Mobile is not immune from that. If the crime trends and patterns, whether it's violent crimes or otherwise, if it's up nationally, you're going to find that it's up here.
Okay.
What we have to do locally is try to find a way to combat that crime when it is rising.
Well, so there's the big national stories are these municipalities that defunded their police department and go, oh my gosh, crime went through the roof. Yeah.
Right, and they're surprised about it.
They're surprised about it, I don't know. Right. But here in Mobile, we didn't defund the police.
Right.
I feel this is my hometown, so I don't know to compare it against other places, but I think we support our law enforcement in this community.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that part is not there. We didn't defund you, but the violence is up. This violence in our city is up. I know that other crimes might be down, but I mean, I don't go through the list, but we go through a week or two, and it's shooting, and it's shooting, and it's shooting. And when you and I were probably, when we were young, there were shootings in Mobile as well. But it just seems it's at a pitch now that you talked about that trend up. You feel that it's up high on one of those trends, right?
Sure, absolutely. And it is. And it doesn't look like it's slowing anytime soon. But I think we're doing something locally about it. And, you know, it's apparent that the president himself is actually trying to tackle it as well.
Yeah. Finally, I guess the attention enough that he, you know, my gosh, what they've dealt with in New York. But here at home, you're doing things specifically. And this is what I was calling for when you came in as police chief. And I was talking about this on the radio. I said, I sure hope that the new chief gives me things he's going to do.
Sure.
Instead of just saying, I think this is bad and we're going to fight crime. I get that. But you came in and I appreciate it. I talked about it on the air. I said, when he talked about stops, you know, the traffic stops or roadblocks or shot spotter, give me the tools you're going to, I mean, you don't have to play your whole hand so right. The bad guys don't know it, but I mean, tell me what tools you're using.
So, Sean, great question. You know, you've heard me talk about the strategic plan with the Mobile Police Department going forward, and I think it's important to know that it's, you know, crime is not one simplistic issue. It has many variables. It's affected by many ranges of things, and no one person has all the answers. If they did, they probably wouldn't be in the city of Mobile. They'd be somewhere else being well compensated more.
Right.
But I can assure you this, intelligence-led policing is a huge thing, and we've been doing this since 2013 when Chief Barber came in. But what does that mean?
Yeah, I was about fixing to ask you.
So it's fancy talk, but at the end of the day, what does it mean? Well, you know, typically in years past, random patrols, you know, officers would come to roll call. We would tell them, hey, you've had a burglary or two in your area. Mm-hmm. We need you to be mindful of it. But we are really light years ahead today than we were 8-9 years ago. Intelligence-led policing is understanding the data, where the crime is occurring, not last week, not 4 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
But day to day. And then so what that allows, especially our precinct commanders, is to analyze that data, figure out where the trends and the patterns are, and then to move it out to the field supervisor so we can make sure that the beat officers know exactly where they're going. Let me give you just one quick example.
Okay.
So what that means is if an officer's on a 12-hour patrol shift, we're not just telling him in a 12-hour period, go answer calls and do your best. What we're doing is being very strategic, and we're letting him know, yeah, you still have to answer your calls, but when you're doing those proactive strategic policing models or proactive models that we use, make sure that you're in the area where we're having the problem. So if we're having an area in a 4 or 5 block radius in Midtown between 12 and 4 o'clock in the morning and they happen to be a rash of vehicle burglaries, well, we're going to tell that officer exactly where the problem is, where he needs to be, mm-hmm. and make sure that we maximize our success going right. forward. Now, that has worked very well, I will tell you, over the years. So much that when I was the precinct commander in 2014 and 15 of the North Side or Third Precinct, we had about a 24% reduction of all crime, Part 1 crimes, both violent
wow.
and property crimes. As a whole, from last year, we're roughly down about 6% in all Part 1 crimes. That includes property crimes, burglaries, commercial burglaries, vehicle thefts. But we are slightly up, I believe, somewhere around 9% on the violent crime. And although that sounds like a lot, it was kind of expected due to people not working, people being at home due to COVID, et cetera.
Right.
A large part of the assaults that you've seen are certainly domestic related, and of course, people being together much more at a longer period of time.
So you reduce this one part, the other part goes up. Does that data, that same data that, and I wonder if it shows you where to be, does it project? meaning like if you know you think about data, like if and just wisdom too, policing wisdom, that if this happens and this happens, if there's a burglary here and an armed robbery here, then that kind of means usually this other thing might happen. Is there anything like that out there?
Yes, and so what you're referring to is what we call predictive patterns or policing.
Okay.
And that is trying to project and predict where the next crime is going to happen.
How's that work? I mean, is it successful?
Well, it is successful to the point that we know where the data is. But there are so many moving parts. You can have all the data, but you need to make sure that you have enough boots on the ground to be able to deal with that data and to be able to come up with a strategy that's effective.
But so that is interesting to me, that there's something out there that you say, okay, well, if there was a this kind of crime here and this other kind of crime here and they happened within, then if we look back through the log books or whatever, then this other thing might happen.
Yes. Well, we have we're actually moving from one a records management system to another, and we're kind of in the middle of that process, but the new program we're going to actually has a predictive policing model to it that's going to actually give it to us, where we don't have to just sit down and one precinct commander looks at it and says, yeah, I think this may be the problem. It's actually going to analyze the data for us. We're probably somewhere 10 to
that's
13
cool.
months out, but this is the age of technology, right? And so the 21st century police agency is going to have to come up with the times, and the Mobile Police Department is certainly doing that.
Just joining us, talking to Chief of Police City Mobile, Paul Prine. You mentioned ShotSpotter. We've talked about that. You put ShotSpotter in, and obviously it's important that shots are fired. You can go to that area, but does that data also come into the mix? Is there any way to you see a trend of where you hear shot, even if you don't catch the person that time?
I mean, yeah, so a little bit about, if we're going to go into that, a little bit about that is we call it Echo Stop.
Echo Stop, okay.
Echo Stop. But ShotSpotter is a standalone program where it is simply more the detection program in and of itself. So in other words, if you have the ShotSpotter in a particular area or shot rings out, it's going to tell us where it's at. And a lot of times we already know where it's at because people are calling in to the police and letting us know. What we're doing is attacking it from a four-pillar concept approach. And what that means is we're partnering with various people and various entities to be able to deal with it. What does that look like? Well, prevention, deterrence, compliance, and detection.
Okay.
The city of Mobile has decided that, you know, if we're going to do this, we don't want to be like Birmingham, and nothing against our counterparts over there, but we certainly don't want to be unsuccessful with it, maybe like Chicago has been, or even Baltimore, and they have the standalone program. What we looked at, and some very smart people with our Gulf Coast Technology Center looked at, and said, well, how can we make this work? Well, if this funding is available through the ARP funding, we have to understand, so let's approach it. How do we approach it? The detection is only one part of it, but it's the prevention. So the city has decided, well, what we'll do is, you know, there's a lot of problems with all these gun violence, whether it's youth that have a propensity to be in trouble, whether it's adults, there are a lot of other issues that are inside that family structure. So how do we deal with it? You have programs like mental health. You've got the school board. You have resource officers. We have investigative youth services division. And so this coordinator is going to come in and says, okay, well, how do we make all this work?
Right.
So the coordinator is going to come in. And so where one program is if we can identify through the school system, maybe children that have posted on social media in some form or fashion that they're going to do this gun violence.
Right.
The idea is that we get involved in it ahead of time, be able to get with the family, maybe move out some family intervention resource officers, do some counseling, and maybe just prevent the crime on the front end.
Right.
Another thing, if I've got a minute, is the deterrence. Well, what do we do? What are we doing about deterrence? Well, environmental design. So how do we fight crime through environmental design?
That's
fancy wordage, right?
Yeah, put it in Sullivanese. What does that mean?
So let me tell you what it means. So the idea is that we go to some of these high crime areas where maybe the street lights have been blown out or even shot out.
Mm-hmm.
And so we light these places up.
Okay.
And so that's just one example of environmental design, and that we make sure that the public feels safe while they're out there. We're also partnering as a part of that deterrence with Alabama Power. And we're putting up camera systems in place, you know, that are strategically located. And when I say strategically located, nobody will know but the police department where these locations are.
Okay, they're not going to be like the ones where you see around town watching that intersection or something.
Right,
like that.
And here's the thing. They're not going to be in secret. I mean, you know, the public, if they see a camera, they see a camera.
Right.
But the idea is that it is a deterrent in and of itself. It's not constantly recording, but when that shot detection goes out, that camera will be designed to turn toward that area and just maybe catch someone.
License plate, person, something like that?
Absolutely. Vehicle description, clothing description, an individual running on foot, maybe even running into a house.
Uh-huh.
And so those are the things that's really important. Another part of the deterrence is really community engagement. And this is kind of the first part of it, is coming to you and saying, look, we're not just wanting to call it ShotSpotter. We call it Echo Stop.
Okay.
And so the idea is that, you know, whether we're in the school systems, faith-based organizations, community action groups, we can get out there in the community and say, listen, this is the deterrence.
Yeah.
This is a part of that deterrence. Another part of it is compliance. Well, really, what does that mean? Compliance is ensuring that when we have recidivist offenders and we catch folks that maybe shouldn't have weapons,
mm-hmm.
that we leverage our federal partners, the FBI, the ATF, the DEA, with trying to get federal crimes in addition to whatever state crimes we're able to get to make something stick where we can get these violent offenders off the street.
I know that's a big, like in folks I've talked to over the years in law enforcement, it's a big deal to make a better case, right? I mean, somehow on gun crimes, the federal partners can make a better case than state can.
Well, they don't necessarily make a better case. Without getting into it, we certainly don't have the time. On the state level, you have misdemeanor crimes and certainly felony crimes, and there are hurdles and thresholds in order to affect those arrests.
Okay.
And so in order to do that, for example, if I fire a weapon at you right now, that just may be reckless endangerment if that bullet doesn't hit you or you're not injured by it and it just whizzes by you. Well, that now is a misdemeanor crime. So if the person being shot at doesn't want to prosecute or decide, you know, I'll get him back later. Well, guess what? It's, unless the officer seen it in his presence, there's not a whole lot you can do about that.
Wow. All right. I'm going to come back more of this discussion with Chief Prine and get your questions as well at the text line 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. And good conversation with Chief of Police for the City of Mobile, Paul Prine, talking about fighting crime. And yes, this is technology is a big part of this, but then you were also talking about the other side. I mean, there's technology part, but there's also the part of having interactions with these families, preventing crimes, doing these things. So it's not just all data-driven.
Absolutely not. You have to have men and women in the field to interact with people and, you know, to solicit help from the community. We cannot do it without the community.
Grant says to the chief, can we have people like Officer Marsh from Cops for Kids and to speak at middle schools 5 days a week and be a liaison for the youth and get them before that crime culture takes hold of them and ruins their life?
We have several strategic initiatives through the chief's office that deals with that. And if we could clone Sergeant Marsh to be at every school every single day, we certainly would. But unfortunately, we only have one of him.
Okay, before we go to the news, this is good. So Sean on the text line says, the first 48, so that TV show, having a dedicated crew covering Mobile, does that help or hurt y'all with the Mobile Police Department?
Well, you know, Sean, it's a great question. You know, you could probably look at it from both perspectives, pros and cons, but I'll tell you, I think there's far more good that comes out of it than bad, just simply because the guys are really popular on the show,
mm-hmm.
and so through their social media accounts, they get a lot of tips, they get a lot of feedback from folks that put them in a particular direction on an investigation that ordinarily they wouldn't get.
How much, I mean, how often is that tip from the public? I mean, because y'all are doing the police work, you know, but how much, how valuable is that tip? People always wonder, should I even bother them? And because they probably already know this thing.
Well, we're inundated sometimes with tips, especially when we solicit it from the public. Mm-hmm. But I will tell you, we go through each and every one of them, especially for violent crimes, just because it's such a hot topic. And but it is paramount that we get those tips. And just to your greater point, our homicide rate has over an 86% clearance rate, which is phenomenal.
That is fantastic.
It is.
We, of course, have this other issue that's outside, as I always say, y'all are enforcing the laws. The other part in the judicial system is people that are back out on the street that y'all, I can't imagine, because as a citizen, it drives me berserk. But as law enforcement, to have arrested the person and got them, and then they're right back out and do it again, I'd throw my hands up.
Sean, it's aggravating, to be honest with you. But, you know, the judicial system has its problems.
Sure.
Correctional facilities and the system has its problems. And certainly the prosecutors has their problem. And we're all fighting the same battle, but from different fronts.
Yep.
And we're all fighting with the same restraints, or sometimes even different restraints, to come up with the same goal.
Coming right back, more of our conversation with Chief Prine right here on Midday Mobile.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 1:34, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. We'll continue our conversation with Mobile Police Chief Paul Prine. I do want to check in with Chief at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry, Angelo Semifero. Hey, man.
Hey, man. How we doing today?
Doing good. As we go into the weekend, kind of like the this week in precious metals, what did we do this week? What's happening?
Gold and silver had dipped a little bit. They're starting to climb back up. I think that news of what's going on right now with Russia and China is going to make next week a really hectic week on the gold and silver side. So if you've been thinking about getting gold and silver, this weekend might be a good time to jump in.
Yes, I like that. Some concrete advice. And this is a person that, I don't know, I don't want to age myself, Angelo, but many years ago I came to you, and you've been a great educator on precious metals for me. Now on the gift side, the collectible side, Valentine's Day, I know that most guys won't shop till like the 13th, but for those super responsible dudes, talk to them right now. What do y'all have in the way of gifts?
We've got a bunch of beautiful diamond pieces in stock, everything from necklaces, you know, pendants, earrings, engagement rings, you name it. If you want something a little less flashy, a little less gaudy, we've got some beautiful sterling silver pieces as well. So ultimately, if you need a piece of jewelry and you want to get it at a great price, we have stuff in the price range from $20 to $20,000, so we can hook you up. You don't even have to come into the store at first. You can check it out online, mobilebaycoins.com. You can sort of preview everything there and then check it out in person by coming down to the shop right here in Midtown.
All right, Angelo, I appreciate it, and we'll talk to you soon.
Have a good one, Sean.
You too. Angelo checking in from Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. Continue our conversation with Chief of Police Paul Prine. You know, we kind of talked about the Echo Stop and that portion. One I do want to talk about as well is the roadblocks. I don't know what the right, I may be using the wrong word for it or whatever, but the stops, you know, those traffic stops y'all been making. They've been successful?
Well, they have been. You know, we call them safety checkpoints.
Safety checkpoints. Okay,
right.
There we go.
And so I think that's really the best way to put it, is that the primary goal behind safety checkpoints, Sean, is simply compliance. Mm-hmm. You know, obeying the rules of the road to ensure that people have driver's license, to make sure they've got their insurance, mm-hmm. proper registration. But the alternative goal is to also maybe prevent the next violent crime that's happening. You say, well, how do you prevent that?
Yeah.
You know, cars coming through or in an area is two things. If they come through, there's nothing in the law that prevents us from developing probable cause on a situation. You see a AR-15 in the back of someone's vehicle, you know, the law doesn't prohibit the officer from going forward and making an ancillary arrest on another crime.
Right.
But the other idea is that we have such a massive amount of officers out there that it also becomes a deterrent for would-be criminals that maybe are in a particular area and that kind of have that idea that, hey, we're going over here to commit a crime.
Yeah, look at all these police.
We'll move on and do it another day. And so if we can prevent one violent crime, or any crime for that matter, then it doesn't matter how many officers we send out there, we accomplish the mission.
You talk about the violent crime, and we have a few minutes left here, just a few, but what if I know there's probably a ton of a list, but if you had to pick the top things driving the violent crime in our city, what is it?
That is a loaded question. That is probably the million-dollar question, because if I had a real good answer for you,
you'd be out there stopping it.
We would absolutely attack it. But I think there's a lot of problems that come with youth violence and people in general that just have no conflict resolution skills, and they know nothing else but to resort to violence. And we've got to find a way to educate the public that there are other alternatives other than turning to any type of physical violence to resolve a problem.
Well, but how can we, and you say the physical violence part, but how many times, I put myself, I'm old man category, I'll be 50 soon, so I tell the, back when I was a boy, you know, I know kids get tired of hearing of that, but we were no angels, we fought.
Right.
We fought, people got their butts whipped. You know, then you, but, and I had access to guns. I mean, we hunted and all that stuff, but it never, the two didn't come together. The butt whipping and the access, like we, not to say we wouldn't, there weren't fights and all that stuff, but the idea that I would have ever shot somebody and they wouldn't be here anymore.
Right. Well, I can tell you this. You and I, sounds like we kind of grew up similar, probably just different locations. Discipline was a big deal in my home, and it was done in
mine
a proper
too.
Way. But discipline done not in a proper way could also be detrimental to folks coming up. I've always said that most of the things that we learn in life, we learn as a child. We learn in the home. We learn through culture. Mm-hmm. And if we don't learn to deal with those things, that we carry those over when we become adults, right, wrong, or indifferent.
True.
And so when we become adults, regardless of how you grow up, if we don't learn to deal with things in a civilized way and we resort to violence, well, this is kind of what you get.
It almost like, of course, I know everybody would like, all the kids would be nonviolent, but, you know, kids are, I just, let's just have some stories where they punched each other a few times. And, you know, how many people that you got in a fist fight with when you were in school are buddies of yours now, or you see them and their kids go to school with your, I mean, they're, right. Everybody's still here.
Well, I think it gets back into our culture as society as a whole. You know, gun violence is played everywhere. It's on video games.
Mm-hmm.
And we may take for granted and said, well, we had those games coming up as well. But over a long systemic period of time, I believe it's downplayed a lot until it happens, and we have kids out here shooting weapons without any real idea of what the recourse is when they pull that trigger.
Which is another kind of weird thought I've had. Would taking kids and taking them to the range out here, or, and putting the gun in their hand and letting them shoot through ballistic gelatin or something like that, and seeing what that does... You know, just, I know it's kind of contrary thinking, but where it's, this is what it does. Look what it does.
Right.
You know,
how do you facilitate that?
I don't know.
Right.
It's just like this idea that, like, I agree with you, that people will have no idea that it's not that's going to equal a maimed or a dead human being. How do you?
Yeah, and I don't know what the answer is. I will tell you this. Part of the answer comes from the community. You know, you've heard me say on TV too, parents have to get involved.
Yes.
And, you know, I've got three children of my own. One's grown. Two of them are grown now, and the other one's still in high school. But there's never been a situation where I didn't know where my children were at 8 o'clock at night, at 10 o'clock at night, certainly 2 o'clock in the morning.
No joke. Yeah.
We have to take some type of ownership of it. And even though we may have some families that maybe don't have the necessary skill set to parent or to deal with those things, the community's got to get involved. And I cannot overstate that. Law enforcement is only one part of crime fighting. The community is the stakeholders in the community itself. All of us have to take a greater approach to, if you see something, tell it.
Yeah.
If you know something, you need to report it.
And that goes back to something we said earlier about tips and all that. I do think people are reticent to call law enforcement, give a tip, because they'll think that y'all are going to be like, yeah, we know. You know what I'm saying? They're going to go, oh, yeah, uh-huh, all right, we know that.
We never take it for granted, Sean, that is a fact, because it could be that one tip that may
just... Do you have that moment where you're like... Oh, wow. Yeah.
There have been times in my own career, even as an investigator, I received a tip and I'm like, yeah, it's probably nothing to it. And it turned out to be the smoking gun.
It is worth people contacting.
Absolutely. And we encourage it and we solicit it.
Looking at the, Jason said this, he and I have talked about about it before, is taking kids. It's a little rough, but taking them to the morgue and showing them the bodies with bullet holes, you know, just trying to make things real out there. I appreciate what y'all are doing. Once again, I know this is a process. You know, you've been there how many months now?
Well, I've been there, I guess, about 3.5 months.
Okay, as chief, right?
Right.
27 years in law enforcement. So it is a process. But I think the more you ask Mobilians if they can help and give them a way to help, they're going to step in. Because people are, you know, I mean, people want to change.
Well, Sean, if I can say this, I heard a pastor say this, and it has stuck with me not too long ago. He said, you know, people, when they really hate something and they hate it bad enough, they'll change. And so that's what we're asking people. If you hate crime enough, we're asking you to get involved.
That's great. And those methods, you know, we'll talk about them. You'll come back and talk with me. Things people can do, step up, whether it is giving a tip, watching out for their own community. These are great things. Chief, I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Sean.
All right. Chief of Police Paul Pine joining us here on Midday Mobile. We'll have these conversations, of course, going forward over time. And it's a, yeah, it's a deal that we've talked about before. We all got to be part of this. Obviously, the mechanism for enforcement are those folks right there that are in blue. But we're all part of this process. All right. Coming right back, more of our conversation. Eaton Barnard's going to join me with Taylor Martina Rowan. That's on the way. And a reminder, too, you want to see what's going on this weekend, you need to check out the Mobile Rundown. It's Dan and Dalton and the folks from the Mobile Rundown. That's on our podcast page. You can go to the website. You can go to the app. You can go to iTunes. You can go to Stitcher. You can go to TuneIn Radio. All those places, they've got it waiting for you right now. All right, be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5. And my guest back in studio, Eaton Barnard from Taylor Martino Rowan. Good to see you.
Hey, Sean, how are you?
I'm good. Lot to talk about here, but as we talk about the, you and I were talking before we went on the air, about the worst day in somebody's life. You know, we talk about that when somebody comes to see you, I hate it, but they're not coming to see you because something great happened.
That's exactly right.
I mean, something that was bad enough that they've now contacted an attorney.
Right. That they are, most of the times, somewhat desperate.
Yeah.
They have suffered a severe injury. They can't work. Most people are not prepared to be out of work. They haven't saved to be out of work. And they really are looking at the lawyer to be their guide and to counsel them through it and get them through it.
People listening to us now that had something like that happen to them that through no fault of their own, and it could be, we could talk, could be product, could be situation, whatever, that they now have limitations of lifestyle or earning ability, but they may not think they have a case, right? This really stinks. This is really horrible. But they may not have thought the next step of, like, how did this happen?
Well, you're exactly right. Unless it's a car wreck where there's just, like, absolute liability, where somebody gets rear-ended, which still can sometimes not be absolute liability, they're almost always worried that whether or not they have a suit. And then what are you going to do about it? And how can you do something about it?
But I mean, it could be. So, yeah, I guess that's a good point. Most people think car wreck and saying that can definitely happen. But we do a lot of other things than drive the car every day.
Sure.
There's a lot of things we do in life and at work and people get hurt.
Yeah. I met with a young man yesterday who fell off a ladder that slipped out from underneath him. He'd been on ladders hundreds of times. He knew about ladders. When we got into it, when I asked him, well, why did it fall? He didn't know. Until I found out that it wasn't his ladder. And unbeknownst to him, even though the feet looked normal from looking down at him, but they were missing, one of them was missing the rubber grip sole so that when he got on it, it just shot out from underneath him. He had no idea that he had a case or whether or not there was anything to do about it.
And this is a person through their injuries that he can't work now.
No, broke both of his arms.
So that's what I'm saying. That's not a car wreck. That's a different kind of situation. Because I guess we think car wrecks and then we think there's also the injuries from big companies, right? And these are maybe make more news than these, you know, a ladder slips or something like that. But those get attention as well. A company
sometimes it's been showed knowingly has a product or has been part and parcel to just kind of sweeping the dust under the rug on something, and people get hurt. People lose their lives in some cases.
Well, it's like the 3M cases that Ed's handling.
These are the ear protection, y'all, if you hadn't heard the discussion before.
Right. When we roundtabled the discussion about those cases, I was shocked at the evidence that a company like 3M would – it's even – I think it's gross to even call it design because they just – apparently got a kindergartner design these earplugs.
Ed told me at one point that there was one of the kinds of earplugs that actually made it worse than not having earplugs at all.
I think that's true. And then when they finally, when the cat got out of the bag and people started noticing, these are our veterans. These are most people who got these were veterans and they needed
artillery. Here's your hearing protection,
which should be the best hearing protection, right, not the worst. And instead, some company like 3M just throws these things together and these people are suffering. They don't even know it.
So, I mean, talking to those kind of people who are veterans in that situation or a young man that has an injury that keeps him from working, you know, at his regular job, people have this worst day. And then they probably don't think about it day one or day two, but they're in weeks out, their inability to earn, their inability to live their lives. They're sitting there at home thinking, do I have a case? What about that process? I mean, will you take, like, just listen to people? Because I think some people are embarrassed. Like, I don't want to call Taylor Martina Brown. I don't want to call Eaton and have him go, what? What are you talking? You know?
No, absolutely. I will talk to anybody who wants to talk to me about anything because people deserve to be listened to, number one.
If somebody even thinks, I don't have, have you had people come and go, I don't have a case, Eaton, but.
It's happened a lot. It's happened a lot more than even I would have thought, where they think, okay, I had a guy in the last couple of weeks, I've had a couple of people whose business, one had a business and the other, their home, their brand new home flooded with sewage during Hurricane Sally. Ugh. And so while they weren't physically hurt, this was devastating. I mean, their entire house had a foot of sewage in it.
Ugh.
And my first thought was that just falls under the category of, you know what happens, literally.
Yeah, literally.
And but then when I started looking into it, I realized that it was a home that was made by a company that you've probably heard of.
Mm-hmm.
And their house sat at the very bottom of a hill so that when the pump, the sewage pump stopped working because the power went out.
We know what flows downhill.
Flows downhill. And they should have had a very simple $30 device on their sewage line. It's called a backflow preventer or a backwater preventer that literally keeps stuff from coming back into your house and only lets
go out of your house. One way. Yeah.
Right. $40.
And it wasn't there?
No. And it's required by code. So
you're probably talking to some other people who might have experienced that. They're like, oh, really?
Yeah.
So that's why somebody might have thought that was just a blanky situation.
Right.
But in fact, there's a reason it happened to them and it was.
Right.
So they need to call you.
All right.
Yeah. They need to talk to you.
Yeah.
They need to. So it's okay. Even if you think like, you'll let somebody know if it was just a bad day or actually they have a case.
My cell phone is on my business card.
Yeah.
I give my cell phone to everybody.
You live this stuff 24/7. We've met before. I mean, these cases on your mind as you lay your head down, as you get up in the morning, on the weekends, this is what you're thinking about.
That's right. I have my, what I call 4 a.m. thoughts.
Yes.
And my wife now has gotten to the point where she asked me, what's your 4 a.m. thought? Almost every day. And I do have one at least two or three times a week. And it's, you know, it's interesting. Because
Well, where's that thing? I mean, we probably don't even have time to get it. We'll do it in some other show. They say about the researchers, the reason you have those 4 a.m. thoughts, or I call them shower thoughts, is that you shut down part of your brain that was, you know, is resting, that keeps you breathing and all that stuff. It's just taken over there. And then it has room for these connections, you know, these eureka moments. And in this case, you're having those eureka moments for your clients.
Well, I'm going to be honest with you, Sean. I'm not that smart, and I probably shouldn't say it on the air, but
I think that
God gives these thoughts to me. I really do. And I'm not trying to be hyper religious or anything, but I really do believe that God gives me these moments to kind of help me out because he knows I'm not that smart. So.
Come on. You're very smart in helping out a lot of folks. So let's talk about this. The process of talking with you or any of the other attorneys at Taylor Martino Rowan, they get in touch with you, they get your card, they've got your cell phone, and you're going to tell them whether they have a case or not.
Pretty soon, I can tell within a short time whether or not I need to spend more time with them.
Right.
So, and there are times like I told you about the latter case where my initial thought is this is not a case, but this person deserves to have somebody take a really close look at it because he's really in bad shape.
Yeah.
So I drive out to his house and I spend 2 hours with him. And it's not until I leave and get back to my office that I figure out
bingo,
the problem. And again, it's one of those situations where, you know, but I do spend an hour and a half to 2 hours with every person who I meet with.
Well, and that's, you know, one of these major differences between Taylor Martino Rowan and other groups and watching y'all over time, that it does take time to figure that out. That's not something that a 5 or 10 minute assessment of a case would do. Y'all, I mean, y'all are a quality, you know, over a quantity.
Yeah. The to me, we're not McDonald's.
Right.
We are somebody who's going to serve somebody the best we can give them. And you can't do that unless you know the people that you're talking to. You get to know your clients. My clients call me. I have clients call me from 20, 30 years. I got a video yesterday from a client I represented 20 years ago.
Wow.
Playing the drums with the band Alabama.
Well, that's pretty cool.
It was cool. Yeah, but I mean, it was, you know, we're friends. My clients are my friends, but you will be a lot more vested or invested in a case if you really know the people and you really like them. And sometimes if you really know them and you don't like them, you're still invested because everybody deserves, and everybody's different. And I don't judge people. I mean, I know that.
But what you're coming from you is it's personal relationship. It's not, I know this sounds cliche, but it's not a number. It's not a file case number. It's that human being.
That's absolutely right. And, you know, like I said, it's relationships.
Yeah.
My daughter asked me the other day, what's your favorite part of life? And I said, relationships. And it's true. It's, you know, this is such an opportunity. I don't see it. I really don't see being a lawyer as a burden. I love my job and I like meeting people. And even if I don't take the case, you know, like I helped somebody the other day who had a minor car wreck. And I said, look, you don't need a lawyer, but I'll help you negotiate it so you don't have to pay me or anybody else.
Right.
And then down the road, that person will refer somebody to me because they remember to help them. And that happens.
It's relationships.
So, yeah, exactly.
All right. Time to build that relationship with Taylor Martino Rowan. As for this man, Eaton Barnard, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Sean.
You can contact the Taylor Martino Rowan Law Firm at 251-433-3131 or search online Taylor Martino Rowan.
No representation is made that legal services performed are greater than the quality of legal services of others.